You are responsible for you. Everything in your life is a direct result of your thoughts.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and we have an outstanding guest with us today. Through consulting, teaching, podcasting, and writing, Andy Wines is an enthusiastic supporter of veterans, entrepreneurs, and the environment. He provides vets, entrepreneurs, and business leaders with tactical advice to level up. True to his Wisconsin roots, Wines is a Midwest reality check for anyone facing self-doubt, and as a fellow Midwesterner, I appreciate that more than I can express. His speaking engagements use data-driven methodologies and battle-tested experiences to give audiences practical takeaways. He has over 2 decades of military service during Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, where he continues to serve as U.S. Army Reserve Career Counselor, holding the rank of Master Sergeant. Outside of speaking, his ventures include Green Up Solutions, Camo Crew, Responsible Junk Removal, and the Trash Talk Business Podcast. But today, he's here to talk to us about his newest book, Stop Avoiding Your Numbers, which is available tomorrow on Amazon, and we'll, of course, have a link to that book down in the show notes. Andy Wines, welcome to the Daily Helping Podcast. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on here, Richard.
You bet. So, you know, there's so much we could talk about. We teased your military career. You're still helping vets in a big way, which is fantastic. But what I want to know is I want to dig into your why. I love doing that with people who come on the show. I want to jump on the Andy Wines time machine and go back with you. Talk to us about some of these, you know, major moments in your life that put you on the path you're on today.
The critical moment I often recall was 10 years into my military career. I was voluntold to attend Master Resiliency Training. And so it was right before I went to Gitmo. So I did a year in Iraq back in 2006 and 7. And then in 14-15, I was on my way to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba as a platoon sergeant. And I was voluntold to go to this school. And at that time, up until that point, for 10 years in the military, I thought I had to be, you know, Billy Badass. I thought I had to be the toughest guy, the hardest man around, right? Never showed signs of weakness. And then I went to a school, and the first 30 minutes of instruction was this idea that asking for help is a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness. That was life-changing. And I had a rough deployment at Gitmo, and all the while, I was a master resiliency trainer, so one of 2 soldiers within the company of 125, where I'm teaching soldiers these modules on how to become more resilient while I was living through some of the toughest times of my life. I was going through a premature divorce. It was obvious before I was leaving that I was going to be going to, you know, getting divorced. And so I'm deployed. I got a new baby. I'm going through a divorce. And then I got kicked out of my platoon and ultimately kicked out of my company within the Army, all in about a 6-month period while I'm training soldiers on how to be resilient and how to show up as your authentic self every day. And so that was the critical time. I was 30 years old. That was the most critical period of my life. When I was at my lowest, when I felt alone, and when I started to realize that I had control over my future by rewiring the way I thought about my present.
So most of our epiphanies, certainly mine did, it sounds like yours did too, come after travesty, rock bottom kind of a thing. If you don't mind my asking, what led to you getting kicked out of the military?
Speaking my mind. That's it, right? So I'm a 4th-generation entrepreneur. Grew up on a farm. I work concrete, work construction, and I chose to join the military. So I have a very entrepreneurial mindset. I've now been a business owner since I came home from Gitmo. Structure is something I enjoy in small doses. And what happened in the military was, as I was a resiliency trainer, more soldiers were coming up to me and telling me their problems. Well, I reported them up, right? Utilize our system in the military, which is IG, Inspector General. It's like internal affairs of the military. And I did it with very little tact, very little politicking. I tell it how it is, right? And I pissed off all the right people in the chain of command to get kicked out of my platoon initially, and then ultimately kicked out of my company. And there was one leader in particular that wanted to kick me out of the army and then try to bar me from reenlistment. And I put up a good fight because I knew what I was doing was right. I knew I was following military doctrine, army regulation. I was also listening to soldiers, or actually listening to them, not talking at them like I had been trained for those, you know, previous 10 years. And so I put up a good fight, not knowing how it would end. And it ended up working out for me. And it's because I stood up for what I believed in. I was willing to be wrong. As I sit here and reflect now, I was willing to be wrong in the pursuit of being right. And that's that was the key.
I'm curious, in these moments, it's usually not like something bad happens and then 2 seconds later, you know, boom, this light bulb goes off. Oh, I get it. So in your moment of despair, you know, to use some clinical language here, you really shifted from this external locus of control with things happening to you to this internal locus of control, this belief that you had the ability to control the outcomes in your life, which many people never get to. And I would argue that there's a good portion of our society today, unfortunately, that has a wildly external locus of control, which is causing them all kinds of mental health problems. But what was it that helped that light bulb turn on for you? What were the signposts, the experiences? What made that shift for you?
Yeah, so I love what you're talking about. Really, you're talking about Carol Dweck's work, right? It's fixed-minded people versus growth-minded. And I would argue 80% of people are, or not I would argue, she argues, and 80% of people are fixed-minded and only 20% are growth-minded. And so for me, it didn't feel right going along with the crowd. It didn't feel right doing what was easy. And so all of a sudden, I started listening to my intuition, started trusting myself. And I struggled with confidence all my life. And so I struggled with that. So I would want to speak up. I saw clearly the answer, and everybody else was going the opposite direction. And I'm like, well, hold on, it's right there. Like, how is nobody else seeing this? And then I started trusting myself and speaking up and calling out what I saw. And yeah, it disrupted some people. The more I called things out, the more I slept easy at night. The more I had confidence in myself, the more I was saying, you know what? I'll take the hits. I'll be the outsider. You know, at the time, the way I said it was, I felt like I was on an island, on an island, on an island, right? Because I'm an island, Gitmo, right? And now I'm on this island within. I got kicked out of my platoon and then my company. So I'm no longer around the people that I knew. And then I was on an island because I was going through a divorce. So I didn't even have anybody offside. I felt like I had nobody. And so through that work, I stayed true to myself. I was going to college at the time. I was reading a lot of Stephen Covey at the time. And what stuck with me this whole time is this idea that, you know, you sow a thought and it reaps an act. An act becomes a behavior. A behavior becomes a habit. A habit ultimately leads to your destiny. And so I started changing my thoughts. And when I read it from Covey years before that, I'm like, well, this is just that, you know, psychological mumbo jumbo. The nice thing about what the Army teaches, right, everything in the military is written at like a fifth grade reading level. So the average person can understand. And what I learned in that mass resiliency training, which was developed by the University of Pennsylvania, is that I'm not in control of my consequences. That's what they call it. I'm not in control of my emotions, reactions. And I grew up in a household with my mom and dad saying, consequences, repercussions, right? Those were the two words that I faced, right? When I got caught stealing, cheating, smoking, it was consequences, repercussions, right? So those words resonated with me. And now all of a sudden, I have this new piece of information put in my brain that says, no, Andy, you're not responsible for your actions. And you're not responsible for the things that happen near you, those activating events. However, you are absolutely responsible for the thoughts you have about the thing. And so now, the simplest language I can say, this getting kicked out of my platoon didn't happen to me as a victim. It happened for me as a victor. And now what is the gift in all of this? And so you asked me two questions ago, what is my why? Why is Andy Wines on this world? Mark Twain talks about it. The two most important days of your life, the day that you're born and the day you figure out why. In my current trajectory, my why is to change the world one word at a time. Because Covey's research was dead on and it was incomplete. Covey said, sow a thought and you reap an act. Thoughts are manufactured by words. And so when we change one word, we now change the rest of the narrative. And so I'm very particular, on specifics, right? And so I started saying, okay, what is the gift in this? What is the cross, right? You have two choices. You either bear a cross or the cross is put upon you. And so I shifted my language, and it's daily practice. And when things are going really well, it's really simple to say, oh, look at all the abundance I have, right? This stoic mindset. My wife and I joke, you know, when we're at odds with each other or when life throws us a curveball and we're like, oh yeah, stoicism is a lot more difficult when things aren't going your way. And so when I replace those thoughts and when I choose to do it, when I'm actively doing it, right, that real-time regulation, I can start seeing the world more clearly and I can see it in a way where I have a lot more control. And that's coachable. So 80% of people that are fixed-minded, they can choose to join those that are growth-minded. It's that choice. Do you want to stick with what's comfortable? Or do you want to go on this path of self-discovery and get into some ugly stuff in some uncomfortable situations, right? And for those that choose, make that choice, it's going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge. Whatever word you want to use, it's complicated. It's complicated to rewire your brain. I'm talking about this. I'm 41 years old. I'm talking about 2014. It's 2026. That was over 11 years ago. And it's a daily habit I work on. Every day I work on it. And every day I fail doing it at some point. And yet I put up the fight. I'm willing to be wrong. I'm willing to fail in the pursuit of being right, in the pursuit of being successful.
I love everything you just said. Stephen Covey actually was the first author I read at the age of 22. I had an ex-Marine drill sergeant was my first boss as a salesperson. He handed me a stack of books, including Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
That's the book.
Yep. And, you know, there were other good books. West Point Way of Leadership, of course, you'd expect a Marine to throw that at you. But Covey spoke in such simplicity, yet there was science behind what he was talking about. And I love that we went there because in 2026, he doesn't get talked about enough, I don't think, really. You know, and nothing against any of the other Mount Rushmore pillars of personal development, but Covey was an exceptional read. I'll actually throw a link in the show notes to that book because I think to start the year, everybody should be reading Seven Habits of Highly Effective.
That's the book. So my wife and I, our very first time we had coffee, we knew each other for years. And we're sitting there having coffee, and I reference Covey, and she stopped. She goes into her bag. She's got a bag that's like, she could go on a 3-day expedition. Everything's in that bag, right? What'd she pull out? Covey, with about 50 post-it notes in it, and handwritten, oh yeah, this, that, the other thing, right? And her and I sat there, and I talked about, for me, begin with the end state in mind, sharpen the saw. Those are the two habits. I wrote a paper. Again, I was at 25, 26, I started going to Milwaukee Area Technical College. I'd come home from Iraq. I got laid off 2 days before Christmas from my father's company. I was unemployed for 6 months. I'd been homeless for a year before that, right? And so I went through all this stuff, and finally I was like, okay, in order to be successful in this world, I need to go out and get an education. And so, I went that path, and I ended up getting my bachelor's degree. And along the way, though, the first book I really read, right, as an adult was Seven Habits. And that book was the start of the journey, right? That was, so I was 25. And it wasn't until then I was 30 that I really appreciated how much that book meant to me. Because at 25, it was a book report and I felt like I was 12 years old all over. And I had to read it. I had to get through the material. I had to do the presentation. So I had to get the degree, you know, so I could, you know, graduate the class. So I had to get the degree. No. What a gift that was. Because now it's 15 years later and I'm referencing Covey. Last night I was at a networking event with my wife and we're sitting there and the guy won a lifetime achievement award. He's been a realtor for 53 years. And he gets up there, he's talking about Dale Carnegie. He's talking about Zig Ziglar. He's talking about Tony Robbins, right? And then goes on with his speech. And then to your point, towards the end, he goes, and this wouldn't be possible. I forgot to mention Stephen Covey. And along the way, people are like, oh, Zig Ziglar, right? Like Dale Carnegie, because they're the more traditional sales, like realtors are reading that stuff, right? And then he said Covey, and my wife and I were like, yeah, and like nobody else got excited. And I'm like, well, hold on, we're not here without Covey, right? And then Carol Dweck's work on growth mindset, it's like, all these other people, they're picking up what Covey started. I remember I was in a meeting, it's like 2 years ago, a marketing meeting, and I'm sitting there, we're talking marketing people, and I just looked up, I talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And the market person goes, hold on, no one references Maslow on a daily basis. I was like, well, maybe we oughta, right? You know, because I lived in Maslow's hierarchy of needs for so long where I thought as long as I got my food, shelter, you know, taken care of, I was good. It's like, hold on, there's more to life than just getting by. There's more to life than this scarcity mindset of good enough, right? And so every day it's Maslow, it's Covey, right? And when I put those thoughts in my brain, my life becomes better instantly because I feel more assured. I feel more confident. I feel more in control even when there's chaos all around me, right? The chaos is there. It's how do I interpret that data that is my superhero strength. That's what I can do. And that's repeatable. And that is something everybody can choose to do.
That's internal versus external locus of control, 101. I love it.
So I would never use that. Obviously, I've heard locus of control, right?
Well, it's a clinician's term, right? But it's exactly right. Exactly right.
You're Dr. Richard, and I'm Andy the Entrepreneur, and we've come to the same conclusion utilizing different symbols because language is ultimately symbols. We learn about that in the four agreements, right? And so once you change the symbols, your reality shifts instantly, just like
100%.
It takes no effort. You're literally rethinking a thought. That's it. One word, change one word.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. I love it. Well, listen, you're an entrepreneur. You've clearly done some cool stuff. You've got your own show, but we've been talking about Covey and his book. I want to talk about your book, Stop Avoiding Your Numbers. Why did you decide to write this book and why now?
I decided 5 years ago to write a book. And I started writing this book called Hustle, Struggle, Grind, The 13 Lessons of Life. And that turned into my first book, which is about neurolinguistics programming, which is aptly named Words F***ing Matter. Retrain your brain to use language that serves you. Again, onus of control. That's the name of my first book. And I realized after I wrote that book, it was a stretch. I was tapping into places that I was learning along the way, and I love it, and I love doing it. And at the end of writing my book, I'm sitting down with my ghostwriter, and we're talking about, you know, the numbers of the book And then all of a sudden she starts telling me about her business. And I go, oh, let's take a look at your P&L. She goes, I don't even know how to access my P&L, profit and loss statement. And I go, okay, well, let's take a look. And at the same time, I was also doing keynotes on the six buckets of business. So that was marketing, sales, the thing you do, operations, resources that are human, and your numbers. And all of a sudden this theme came up. Business owners, time and time again, avoid their numbers. And they avoid them because they're embarrassed, they're ashamed. They think accounting is this foreign concept, debits and credits. What is all this stuff? And so I started working with her as a fractional CFO. I'm like, oh, I'll support you here, right? And I realized with my other consulting clients, as much as I wanted to focus on operations is nothing without data, without the numbers. Because how do we know if something's working or not working unless we have the data? Talk about marketing. How do we know if it's working or not without the data? And so 4 years ago, I started being a fractional CFO in addition to, or doing some of my consulting turned from, you know, general business consulting and advice, like I'm going to pick your brain kind of stuff into, well, let's look at your data. And so I got obsessed with it. And then I realized that, again, this is something I love doing. I love numbers. I love math as a kid. And so I collaborated with another gentleman who's been a CFO for big companies. He worked for Procter & Gamble for 20 years. He has a master's degree in finance. And we came to the same conclusion, similar to how you and I here, Dr. Richard, you and I have come to the same conclusions. You're doing it at a clinical level with, you know, what do you call it, prefixes in front of your names and maybe some letters thereafter. And I'm coming at it with a bachelor's degree and a good idea or two. And so we've come to the same conclusion. And so how do I convey the power of numbers in your business, again, at a fifth grade reading level? And that's what I got excited about. How do I distill down this information for the average business owner? 90% of businesses never get to $1 million. 99% of businesses never get to $2 million. And every single finance book I've read says, okay, once you hit $2 million, then you do this, this, and this. Like, well, hold on. 99% of us never even get to this book. So what's the book that gets us there? And so that's the book I wrote. I wrote a book that's accessible to all. And the reason we called it Stop Avoiding Your Numbers is because that's the problem we're solving. No different than you can reprogram your brain through language. Every business owner is capable of leaning into their data by making the choice to start looking at it and getting curious. Because your data, whether it's a profit and loss statement, a balance sheet, a cash flow statement, a scorecard, heck, the number of people that come into your restaurant, right? It's all data. It's telling a story. Most people choose not to learn the language of their numbers. When you read numbers left to right, it's like reading a novel. And some people are capable of reading the story without support, and some people need the support to interpret the data. And so we wrote a book that allows people to start knowing what questions to ask. I tell people, there's no answers in the book. There's zero answers in the book because you run your business. And yet, there is question after question. There's over 100 exercises, questions or exercises, for you to take into consideration when it comes to your business and your data. Because again, I want to give back. I want to give business owners a chance, a leg up. Small business owners, those are my people. They're choosing to be growth-minded. They're choosing not to have the 9-to-5. They're choosing to risk everything so they can create something. And so I want to give them all the answers, or I want to give them all the questions to lead them to the answers to the test they're taking every day.
I love this. And I love that you said there's no answers. There's just questions. So if someone's listening to this and they're kind of freaking out because they don't have a P&L statement, they don't even know what are the questions to ask. Give me one of the first question or two they need to be asking themselves.
Why are you in business? The first two chapters of the book are about your vision. We're not even talking about numbers. We talk about why did you start your business? Why are you in business? What does your business is a vehicle that serves you. Where is it taking you? Are you a business owner or does your business own you? Marinate on that for a little bit, Mr. Business Owner. Why are you even doing this? When I sit down with business leaders all the time, they'll ask me these questions and I'll listen. And I say, well, it depends. Well, what does it depend on? Well, where are we going? Why are you doing this? You're looking to have a business you want to sell in 5 to 7, 10 years? Okay, here's a path. You're looking for a business you can hand off to your kids in 20 to 30 years? Here's a path. You're looking to work until the day you decide to stop working and close the door? Here's a path. Where are we going? It depends. I own a business. I've owned a business 10 years now. 10 years last month. I started this business in February of 2016. I am now 10 years in business. I have now beat the odds of the business owners, right? 83% of business owners fail, or whatever it is, in 10 years, right? So I've now beat the odds. And it's because I know where I'm going, and our team knows where we're going. I told them 2 years ago, I'm on a 5-year path to exit the business in some way, shape, or form. Whether that's I retire and collect mailbox money from this business, does that mean I ESOP it, in employee stock option program? I sell it to the employees. I sell it to an individual that wants to buy out the business. I sell it to a PE firm. I'm exiting, right? And so now every decision we make is based on that exit. Every decision is, okay, do we hire this person or not, right? For me, for example, whether I exit or not is the difference between do I collect more money now or do I make the investments now? So for me, I'm exiting. I'm going to make the investments now so I have something I can sell more of versus, well, if I'm going to keep just doing this for another 20 years, maybe I take a little bit more cash now. Well, maybe. And so when I sit down with clients, I had a new client I took on a couple of weeks ago in our very first call. We're talking casual, no different than you and I. And she goes, I feel like I'm walking into the principal's office. I go, why? She goes, I feel like I'm in trouble. I go, why? She goes, because I don't have all the answers. I go, great, neither do I. My job as a consultant, whether I'm talking about your numbers or we're talking about your words you put in your head, I ask questions and I give information. There's no answers because the answers are within you. It's our job as humans, not doctors and consultants. It's our job as humans to enhance the lives of those around us because everyone is perfect for who they are. So let's bring out who they are. It's the teachers and preachers and parents that have distilled people down to a version they want them to be. And we have the opportunity to bring out who they were put on this earth to be by asking questions and giving information, not telling them what to do.
I know this is a little loaded of a question because you brilliantly articulated that how the business moves is determined by your goals. But for somebody who is early on, solopreneur, wants to be an entrepreneur, what are the pitfalls, the top mistakes you'd encourage people to avoid?
So in my first book, I have 13 words and phrases. I call them sh- words and phrases. Mistakes is one of my sh- words and phrases. Unless you're 21 and going to the bar, most people aren't on their way out to go make some mistakes tonight, right? We make choices, and choices work out the way we anticipated or not the way we anticipated. We either get what we wanted or we learn with new data, right? So not mistakes, choices. So the biggest pitfall, the biggest choice that I made and so many other entrepreneurs make day one, the one choice that we see time and time again, they don't pay themselves. They don't pay themselves from day one, right? And so you might say, well, I can't afford it. You can't afford not to. And I'm not saying pay yourself that $100,000 a year you bet you were making at your last job, right? Pay yourself 10 grand a year. Pay yourself 20 grand. Pay yourself something so you get in the habit of paying yourself something. Because when you don't pay yourself, you run out of money. And when you are running out of money, and when you personally are making decisions based on your personal bank account, you are not making healthy decisions for the business. And the business is not going to pay you. And then you're in this sphere, this cycle, and it's a downward, right? And so pay yourself from day one. I had my buddy of mine, his name's Jason. He bought out a business, and he had never been a business owner before. And so he bought out this business. He'd been a president of a company, so he understood a lot of things. And I go, well, what's your plan? He goes, I'm going to pay myself $60,000 a year. And in my head at the time, I'm like, dude, you can't afford to pay yourself $60,000 a year. You got to put all the money in the business, right? And yet he paid himself $60,000 a year and he figured it out. And here I am not taking a paycheck, getting mad at every employee, getting frustrated every other week when I'm cutting payroll. I'm not cutting myself in the mix, right? The problem with martyrs is they always die. And business owners become martyrs to their own business. That's self-inflicted pain. And so the simple act of paying yourself from day one is the best practice you can do day one. You're saying, I'm worthy. I earned it. I put the work in. Also, I'm not going to risk my health and home for the sake of this business. I am greater than the business itself. A lot of people will put that business before themselves. They put it before their families. They put it before their future. And then one day they wake up and they have nothing other than a business they despise because they chose not to pay themselves. They chose not to value themselves from day one. And I did it. This isn't, oh, I figured it out. I got the degree. I stood on the mountain of righteousness and I did. Nope. I started my business in 2016. I didn't start paying myself until 2019. Really paying myself, right? Enough to get by. Oh, we had a good month. Let's take a little cash, right? And in 2019, I started to see things a lot more clearly. I went from owning a business to becoming a business owner. Again, one word. One word shift, because I was part of a franchise and I thought, okay, if I do everything for the franchise, when I do everything for the franchise will take care of me. That was the same mindset I had when I said, well, when I take care of the army will take care of me. Guess what? Same thing that happened in the army has happened to me from the franchise. All of a sudden, I started speaking out and I got pushed out. And so I thought, wow, I'm living for all these other people. I'm not even living for me. And when I don't put me first, I don't take care of me. Nothing wrong with being selfish. Nothing wrong with being self-centered. At the end of the day, nobody else cares about me as much as I care about me. So therefore, I got to care about me more than I care about anybody else. And in 2019, I started paying myself. I started treating myself like a business owner, not a guy that owned a business. I started having that confidence that I lacked for the 35 years before that. And all of a sudden, I started making decisions for my future instead of living for somebody else's present. And that was a mindset shift. So again, let's look at these pinnacle moments. We'll do it in five-year decades because that's simple math. At 20, I joined the Army. That was pretty significant. 25, I read Covey. Pretty significant. 30, I go to Master Resiliency Training, and I learn about the ATC model, activated events, your thoughts, and then the consequences. 35, I start living for myself. I exit the franchise I'm part of, and it starts making sense. 40, I start writing the book. this book now that I'm writing, wrote now, out now, about stopping avoiding your numbers, taking what I learned along the way, including I wrote the first book, didn't do great, and now here's the second book, and man, what did I learn along the way? The first book was a stepping stone to get to that next book. And so, because I can now take this time, I talk about the 3 hours, reflect, realize, regulate. So I take time now with you, Dr. Richard. I'm reflecting on those critical moments in my life and how did it shape me. I realize what I'm capable of. I realize where I've struggled, where I have failed. And now I regulate my decisions moving forward. And again, my decisions are based on my thoughts. You notice I'm not talking about emotions and reactions, right? I was told all of my life, oh, self-control, Andy. You got to control your emotions. No, embrace your emotions. Be who you are. Live it. Dig deeper. Go harder. And use a thought behind it. And once I realize that, oh, I'm going to get louder. I'm going to get more obnoxious. I'm going to be me 10 times more than I was the day before. That's when the best stuff comes out. I loved rage. When I got back from Iraq, I really struggled. This was when I was homeless for a year. And I was struggling with PTSD. I didn't know it at the time. And I loved rage because I felt so real. Oh, it felt so good. And what I realized was I was pulling back the mask. I was allowing my true self to come forward. And the thought was, F everybody and the world at the time, right? The thought was, this civilian world is BS. The thought was, everything on the news is garbage and fake. You know, the thought was, I just spent a year and a half gone, and now I'm back and nobody cares, right? And all those thoughts were true. And I let everybody know, trust me, I let my family know, I let everybody at the bar know, I let anybody that walked across my path know exactly what I was thinking and feeling at the moment, right? And I let it all out. It felt great. And because of those thoughts I had. And now my thoughts are, man, what abundance do I have? What joy do I have in the world? What success I've had? And as soon as I put those thoughts in, guess what? I start living that life. You think about a red car, you're going to see a red car. My red car is success, abundance, love, happiness, joy. And all of a sudden, I start seeing those things across the world. I start shaping and changing my language to be thankful instead of having regret. I'm no longer thinking or trying or talking about it. I'm doing the thing. I no longer talk about what I don't want, and I only talk about what I do want. Those simple shifts in language have changed my life. And not like, oh, I thought this way in 180. I'm a great guy. Like, this is a 42-year adventure I have been on, and I'm still on it. And it's a daily choice. I choose what words I use to manifest the life that I want.
I've enjoyed this so much. You know, you've written a book that's, you know, at a glance felt like it was accounting for dummies, but it's much deeper than that. And I've enjoyed everything you've said. I've bit my tongue a little bit because everything you're talking about has a neuroanatomical, you know, corollary. And I love that you just have read and it's real and you've made these shifts in your life and you've laid out a way partially through numbers, but that entrepreneurs can do these things in their lives. This has been so much fun, Andy. I'm so grateful you spent some time with us today. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question, and that is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
You are responsible for you. Everything in your life is a direct result of your thoughts.
Mic drop. Perfectly said. The book is called Stop Avoiding Your Numbers. It's available on Amazon tomorrow. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. But if people want to learn more about you, Andy, online, check out your podcast, all that good stuff, where can people find you on the internet?
AndyWines.com. It's that simple. My personal cell phone number is on the website. It's on the LinkedIn. I'm the simplest person in America to get a hold of. Get a hold of me. Let's bring out the best in you together.
I love it. And for those of you on the treadmill, in the car, we got you covered. Everything Andy Wines will be featured in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Andy, what a blast. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks, Dr. Richard.
You bet. And to each and every one of you as well who took time out of your day to listen to this conversation, Thank you as well. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to go grab 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, in addition to Stop Avoiding Your Numbers, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your social media feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.